This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, welcome to PM. I'm David Lipson. Tonight, the flood threat moves north in New South Wales. We'll go to the Hunter region, where river heights have surged past what's considered a major flood. Farmers in the middle of calving season fear for the animals that can't be reached.
The calves are from one day old up to 2 weeks. They're just needing warmth and care and a lot of loving.
If you can't get feed to the cows, are they going to be able to care for the calves in the way they need to?
No. It's going to be fairly difficult. It would really help us if the water gets away quickly so we can take some action.
And while the rain has eased further south, residents of the Hawkesbury are starting to get a handle on the scale of the clean-up ahead.
This is what I spent. $4,000 or $5,000 here, putting the tiles in.
Because this, when the last flood hit, this was carpet.
I had carpet.
You must be glad you went with tiles.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for your company. It's still raining across vast swathes of New South Wales, with devastating flooding in new areas and rivers surging to levels not seen in 70 years. 5 days into the flooding event, the rain has eased in the Sydney region and rivers have started to recede. But new peaks have been recorded in the Hunter region to the north, and the state's mid-north coast is copping the brunt of the deluge this evening. Tens of thousands of people are under evacuation orders. We're going to hear from locals across flood-affected areas. Our reporter David Sparks is at Windsor in the Hawkesbury region. We'll go to him in a moment, but first to Gavin Coote, who's in Singleton in the Hunter region.
I'm at the flood levee in Singleton. On one side of me is a deserted main street, and on the other is the swollen Hunter River. The floodwater has already risen above the level recorded in the March disaster, and it's still rising. A little bit further upstream from here is where the Hunter River meets with the Wollumbyre Brook. Now, that tributary has also been experiencing major flooding and is wreaking havoc in smaller communities like Broke and Bulga. And so the confluence of two already swollen rivers has many here in Singleton very worried. An evacuation order is in place for much of the town now, and there are very few access roads still open, so many locals have tried to get out of town and are making their way out as I speak while it's still possible. Others are staying at their homes for now. Some are already seeing floodwaters lap at their bottom floor, and in some cases it's actually reaching the floorboards. And on the outskirts of Singleton, where it's a semi-rural area and much of it is underwater now, there have been frantic efforts to move horses, cattle and chooks to higher ground. Many others closer to town are nervously watching the local stormwater drains, which could also contribute to flooding. There's the concern that that could become blocked up and lead to localised flooding on this side of the levee, on the opposite side of the river. I'm just walking down the main street now, where there are sandbags lining shop fronts and there's hardly a business that remains open. I just met Karen Maher. Now, she's decided to stay. She's been checking in on elderly neighbours and getting a house prepared for the potential impact.
We're resourceful and we help each other. So all my neighbours are elderly because I live in an elderly neighbourhood, and we all look after each other. So I think if it comes to the point where our lives are in danger, that we're certainly going to move. We're going to move these old people, but at this stage, we're staying put and everyone's just checking on everyone.
And what have you been doing to prepare, in the event?
I've just put all my treasures away, because naturally that's what you do. And as for everything else, well, you can replace materials, love. You can't replace life.
Yeah.
It's simple. That's common sense.
Has it reached her house before the floods?
Yes. That would have been 3 years ago, but the drains, there was a problem with the drains and the flooding, and it come to the doorstep, but lucky for me, I had sandbags, so I escaped that.
This is the other thing. It's not just the riverine flooding, isn't it? It's just the drains.
The drains. It's a major concern. Yeah, the drains are flooding, and you've just got so. We've been inundated with water for the last 2 years. It's just a constant. You get downpours, and the ground just can't take it anymore. And you've got all the off. You know, we have putty and all the mountains. We have the dams, so we've got constant water, just constant cut.
The evacuation order. How much of the town has it affected so far?
I work at the local hotel, the Albion Hotel, and this morning they were just going out in droves. Droves of cars, one after another, you know. But everyone panicked when they got this message. It's up to the individual where they want to, but you can't risk your life. So I suppose people don't know, so they think, well, let's just get out.
That's Singleton resident Karen Maher speaking with our reporter Gavin Coote. Bernadette Tolson lives on a property in Broke, one of the worst affected areas in the Hunter, with water lapping at her veranda. She spoke to us a short time ago.
Well, David, we're standing on the veranda looking out to this amazing lake, and to the right I can see a SES truck following two guys pulling a kayak, turning into a property our neighbours across the road place to rescue Bob and his son. They've been waiting for a rescue all day, but of course everyone's in demand at the moment.
How close is the water to your property right now?
Our property, the water is lapping our veranda, but we fortunately it would need to come up about 700 mil to come onto our house, into our house. But the water is receding. Praying that tonight's a better night. We've got lots of wildlife, absolutely spectacular. Ducks, swans, swallows, amazing.
And so you say you hope it's a better night tonight than last night. What was last night like?
Last night we were awake all night just watching, monitoring the water come up to the house. The water just came in yesterday afternoon at an intense speed and intensity. Max, my husband, was able to rescue a cow and a calf from our cattle yards. We haven't had water or power for 24 hours, but we're grateful we've got a fire and we've got health, and yeah, we've got lots of support, people calling us, we've got plenty of food, we're doing well.
But you're cut off, I assume.
Cut off. Broke's cut off.
What about damage to your property? You're on a farm there, are you?
Yes, we have a farm. We have a vineyard. We have three varieties of grapes, Chardonnay, Shiraz and Barbera. We cannot see the grapes, the vines.
They're underwater.
They're underwater. We've got cattle. We don't know what's underneath the water at the moment.
So what are you going to do? Are you waiting for rescue yourself, or are you going to hunker down and wait it out?
No, we're going to stay. We've just spoken to the coordinator of the local fire brigade who's working with SES. We believe that we need to stay to protect our cattle because we don't know what's happened with fences and we don't want them to get out onto the main road. Of course, the road's closed, but the water is receding and we feel safe and responsible and healthy enough to be able to stay.
What about your neighbours? They felt differently, clearly.
Yes, they're in a lower-lying area. One lady left last night. She was evacuated, and I noticed someone's been there very kindly managing her horses today in a kayak. And then the other neighbour, his house, we think we haven't been able to communicate with him because his phone's been cut off. We think the water would be in his house.
That's Bernadette Tolson from the town of Broke. Well, once again, this has hit residents in the Hunter just as they were getting back on their feet after the last floods in March. Councillor Sue Moore is the mayor of Singleton.
Yeah, water, lots of water. Yeah, look, I think every community is probably the same. Wondering why again, so soon after last time, you go through it all, the disappointment and whether it's losing crops or having belongings destroyed, to start again. It's hard to think about doing it again, but here we are in the midst of it again. We're a very strong community. The community pull together and help each other, and I know they're doing that again right now. And, you know, of course, there'll obviously be the clean-up after the floodwaters subside and we're into that stage. It's hard sometimes to put one foot in front of the other and keep going. Yeah, but I mean, you know, we do that. we do that, and we support each other, and we just do what needs to be done.
That's the Singleton Mayor, Sue Moore. The floods have destroyed countless crops, potentially forcing up the price of vegetables once again, but livestock has also been hit hard. Craig Lee runs 250 head of cattle on his property at Hinton. He's now cut off from the herd, including calves, just a day old.
We've had something like about 200 mils plus of rain the last 3 days, And we've now got the local rivers, the Hunter River and the Paterson River, overflowing and coming through the farms and also cutting off our access roads.
So are you cut off now from the outside world?
Not completely. The road into Morpeth is cut off. The road, access road to Wollong, is getting pretty dodgy. And the road going into Roma Terrace is still at the moment open, but expected to be closed probably later today.
You're pretty used to this. In fact, just a few months ago, you were cut off for quite a period of time.
We're getting a bit too used to it. Thank you very much. Last flooding we had was in March, where we were marooned for 7 days.
What does it mean for your farm? You say that there's water now coming through your farm. What can you see and what does it sort of look like on your property now?
We've got a magnificent water vista that we'd prefer not to have it, thank you very much. But in my case, we've got about half the farm is covered. Neighbouring farms are in the same boat and the water is coming in fairly quickly and starting to spread. What it means to us is that it's impacting on our feed, obviously. Cattle and livestock have been moved to higher ground, but we're then facing the problem how we feed them over the next couple of weeks and beyond that once the water's gone down.
What's the difficulty with feeding them?
At the moment, the difficulty is that there's water. We can't get tractors, for example, in to put out hay or silage. We're going to have to wait till the rains go away and it gets much, much drier to do it. And the other thing we're going to face, being wintertime, of course, there's going to be slow regrowth with the pastures.
It's calving season as well. That must be complicating matters as well.
It is. Just the mechanics of keeping an eye on and make sure they're all calving properly. But our calving season normally takes about 6 to 8 weeks. We started with this particular herd 2 weeks ago, so the calves are from 1 day old up to 2 weeks. They're just needing warmth and care and a lot of loving.
If you can't get feed to the cows, are they going to be able to care for the calves in the way they need to?
No. It's going to be fairly difficult, particularly with the access arrangements or lack of it and with the water staying around. But it would really help us if the water gets away quickly so we can take some action.
When that water, though, does go away and the media caravan kind of moves on, your troubles aren't over, though, are they?
They're not. They're going to continue. The first thing we're going to find is that how badly affected the pastures and the feed are, and or if there is any feed, and how we're then going to keep the feed flowing for the cattle and the calves.
So you'll have to hand feed for some time after this, you'd imagine.
I expect so. The other thing we'll probably have to look at is whether we sell cattle or send them away on adjustment.
Why is that?
Just because there won't be any available feed and it'll take so long to kick back in. The timing isn't good. It's the opposite. We were just slightly recovering and now been hammered again.
That's farmer Craig Lee from Hinton near Singleton. This is PM. I'm David Lipson. More on the flooding next and ahead as banks start passing on interest rate rises. We'll have some expert predictions on how high they'll go.
What we're likely to see is a continuation of the tightening. We may see them pause for a month and then resume what we would say is sort of a normal increase.
Well, now to the Hawkesbury River region, northwest of Sydney. Flood levels are still extremely high, but they are starting to drop, revealing the damage. David Sparks is in Windsor. He joins me now. David, what's the water level doing where you are?
Well, it's still very, very high, David. I'm looking at it right now, and it still just sweeps right out across the valley. Here in Windsor, it has dropped by a bit more than a metre now, and some flooded residents, when they woke up this morning and went and checked their homes, they saw that the flood water, which was inside their homes last night, was gone this morning, finally. But it's important to emphasise that there are still lots of other homes around here that are still flooded in places on the Hawkesbury, like several areas around here in Windsor and Lower Portland and Wiseman's Ferry. As I moved around Windsor here today, David, the weather is still pretty miserable, I have to say. It's been raining on and off. The streets are quiet, but at some houses there are people who are now trying to sweep water out of their homes and get on with the enormous cleanup task that lies in front of them. And as you watch them work, you can see that this cleanup is going to take some time.
In the front yard of his home in South Windsor, Chad Manning is using a mini tractor trying to scrape away a thick layer of mulch, grass clippings and general sludge that's been left behind. And it's gone right through to the backyard and into the house.
How long have you been living here, Chad?
22 years.
Ever seen a flood like this one?
Well, 3 months ago. There it is there. That's how high it's gone there. Yeah, 2 foot, isn't it?
Oh, this is dreadful. What's all this? We're looking at leaves and bark and mud and...
I don't know what it is. Yes, you've got to try and come and help me clean up inside.
Right. Well,
see how high it is there?
When we go inside Chad Manning's house, the stain left on the walls by the floodwater shows it rose about 40 centimetres above the floor.
Went through the house here.
So have you been hosing out in here this morning?
No, we haven't started here yet.
Right.
We're just doing outside.
Yeah.
And you can see how it's come through here.
Yeah. And you've got couches up on milk crates here. Yeah. Have you lost many belongings, or do you think you've managed to get most of them up high enough?
Well, I think he sort of got most of it up.
Making the damage from this flood even harder to deal with is the fact that he did it just 3 months ago when the last major flood came through. He spent a fortune fixing the damage that time.
This is what I spent four or five grand here putting the tiles in.
Because this, when the last flood hit, this was carpet.
I had carpet.
Right. And so you tore it up. I know there's not a lot of good news today, but you must be glad you went with tiles.
Oh, yeah.
How tough is it, this happening, just not even 6 months after?
3 months it is.
Yeah. How many times has this house flooded in the 22 years you've been here?
Twice.
Both this year?
Yeah.
What does that tell you?
Not good, is it?
While the water fell just enough today to allow some people to get back into their houses to start the cleanup, plenty more homes in the Hawkesbury Nepean catchment are still flooded, and the people who live in them face a frustrating wait before they can get in and get stuck into the huge task that lies ahead. Meanwhile, emergency workers and volunteers have been through another long day. Not far from the centre of Windsor, a flooded street is being used as a makeshift boat ramp by the SES, the RFS and the police. SES Hawkesbury unit member Matt Thornton has been out on the water and is about to head back out.
Yeah, so this morning we've been looking at resupplying. Some of the people are starting to run out of a bit of fuel and food and stuff like that around the Hawkesbury. So we've been sending boats out to those remote communities to give them food and fuel.
Finished with evacuations?
There are some coming in, but with the waters receding, that'll start to slow down now.
So what are some of the locations you've been at? This looks like a boat that can get to a lot of places.
Yeah, so this boat here, we ferry between Windsor and Wilberforce and bring like doctors, nurses, essential workers over, or people that need to be medevaced back out to hospital or something like that. We've also got crews running around the Ebenezer area and up a Colo and doing resupply jobs.
What's going to be the focus over the next few days?
Our focus over the next coming days will be to look at getting people back into their houses and the clean-up effort. In the coming days, we'll still focus on a resupply thing over the next few days, though.
That's SES Hawkesbury unit member Matt Thornton speaking with David Sparks in Windsor. One-off payments for New South Wales flood victims will be made available from tomorrow. The Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has made the announcement while touring flood-affected areas in Sydney. Local leaders welcome the help but say more will be needed to get residents back on their feet once things dry up. Rani Heyman has the story.
The pain of flood after flood has locals in the Hawkesbury seeking answers.
What do we need to do? You're releasing the dam, 97.9%, when the catchment area is full and the cry comes from the government, it's not a flood mitigation dam.
This resident took his chance to appeal to the Prime Minister and New South Wales Premier during their tour of flooded areas.
Look over my shoulder, that's what happens when a little paragraph is not repealed by a government. Somebody needs to pick up the ball and run with it.
In its immediate response, the federal government is providing $1,000 payments for adults and $400 payments for children affected by the floods from 2 p.m. on Thursday. The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, says 23 local government areas in New South Wales are eligible.
This is, I believe, the quickest that these payments have ever been approved. This is on top of the joint arrangements that are being made available through New South Wales and the Commonwealth.
Employees and sole traders who have lost income as a result of flooding will also be able to claim the disaster recovery allowance for up to 13 weeks. Dominic Perrottet says he believes the state government and the Commonwealth has learned from past events.
What we've certainly seen in relation to this event is great coordination between the Commonwealth and the state governments. We sort of CEOC here up straight away. And to have the ADF, 100 ADF on the ground very, very quickly was pleasing. And I think that also inspires and instills confidence in our local communities who have been impacted by these floods. And this is exactly how it should work.
The Emergency Management Minister, Murray Watt, had already activated other financial supports to cover immediate housing, food and clothing for individuals and clean-up and recovery grants for businesses and primary producers. But the Premier acknowledges it hasn't been smooth sailing for everyone trying to access the grants.
Obviously, I want those small business grants, the $50,000 small business grant and the primary producer grant of $75,000 out the door as quickly as possible, and that work is being undertaken as we speak.
Hawkesbury Mayor Patrick Connolly has welcomed the money but says more will be needed as the water recedes.
The federal and state governments have rolled out the support packages so quickly in comparison with prior events where it's taken a few days at least. I think they've done quite well in that way, and we're certainly getting all the support we need right now, but I know from experience that it gets much harder when we move into recovery.
Mr. Connolly says people, especially in agriculture, are going to need significant support for months. He says some farmers have lost crop around five times in the past 18 months, and every time that happens, it costs millions of dollars.
It's not giving any significant help to the industry. And whilst they're private businesses, I think there's a huge amount of public interest in making sure that we keep the agriculture here in Sydney that we have.
His region is one of the most flood-prone in New South Wales, and it's exacerbated by water overspilling from the Warragamba Dam. The Premier, Dominic Perrottet, says the state government and Commonwealth are continuing the process to try to get the dam wall raised. But Patrick Connolly says residents are suffering as they wait for change.
Rani Hayman reporting. Well, banks have wasted no time responding to yesterday's Reserve Bank decision to lift the cash rate. NAB, ANZ, Westpac and the Commonwealth Bank will pass on the latest interest rate rise to customers in full. And with more rate hikes expected in the coming months, how much more should homeowners expect to pay? Isabel Musali reports.
After a couple of years of saving and building a home, Melbourne man Nishad Famali was proud to finally move in.
Yeah, it was a big achievement, and I was really happy until this interest rate hike came in, and quite struggling as a single person. I don't know where it will end, when we will see the fall coming back.
That question is on the minds of millions of Australians who've been anxiously watching the Reserve Bank. It increased the cash rate by half a percentage point yesterday. And today, NAB, ANZ and the Commonwealth Bank announced they'll pass it on to customers in full. But what happens from here? Warren Hogan is a former Treasury economist and the economic advisor to Judo Bank.
At the August meeting, the next board meeting, I expect them to go by 40 basis points or 0.4%. And that will reflect the high inflation number that I anticipate we'll receive in Q2 at the end of July. But then I think they'll sit on the sidelines. They won't move in September. They won't move in October. But another high CPI for Q3 in late October will probably necessitate another 25 basis point move in November on Melbourne Cup Day, which is a very popular day for them for raising rates historically. And we might even get a follow-up 25 basis point move in December.
In the battle to curb inflation, Warren Hogan says the RBA has to strike a difficult balance. But he believes it's achieving that.
And the risk is that if you do more suddenly, it triggers undesirable sort of responses, and that is people suddenly cutting back on spending or worried that this is going to get away from them. You need to give households and businesses a chance to gradually shift their spending patterns. So I don't believe that the RBA should have gone more quickly. I think they've broadly done the right thing.
Dr. Angela Jackson is an economist with Impact Economics and Policy.
I think over the next few months, what we're likely to see is a continuation of the tightening. We may see them pause for a month and then resume what we would say is sort of a normal increase of 0.25 basis points going forward, rather than these sort of bigger increases, which, you know, while they may be justified on the one hand in terms of combating inflation, certainly I think for consumers are making people a little bit jittery about what the future holds.
But she says it's important to watch a few factors that would make the RBA pause.
A lot of the causes for inflation, which is the reason they've moved maybe earlier than they had planned, are supply side and they're international. So if they see, you know, some indications, for example, you know, the war in Ukraine is resolved and, you know, hopefully we have peace there and that leads to lower energy prices globally and also alleviates some of the issues around food prices. If we see coming out of China, for example, you know, some of those supply bottlenecks really start to move and again, we see prices coming down. The other thing I think that probably is a real risk at the moment is a global economic downturn. So what's happening in the United States? So I think if they see and, you know, increasing risks of a recession there. So if they see signs of that, that may also cause pause.
That's economist Angela Jackson speaking with Isabel Massali. With COVID cases on the march again, the government's top advisory group on vaccines has met to discuss the rollout of a fourth dose of vaccine. If approved across the population, it would make Australia one of the first countries to do so. A fourth dose is already available for the vulnerable, but it's still not clear whether it's needed for the general public. Angus Randall reports.
Australia's top vaccine experts have met, and who should have access to a fourth COVID vaccine dose was all but certain to be on the agenda. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese calls it inevitable.
My view is that we will inevitably follow what has occurred in other parts of the world and rolled out a further booster shot.
A fourth dose is currently available to anyone over 65, the immunocompromised, those living with a disability and Indigenous Australians aged over 50. ATAGI is yet to advise widening these restrictions on a fourth dose. Professor Adrian Esterman is the Chair of Biostatistics and Epidemiology at the University of South Australia. He says ATAGI has not seen proof a fourth dose would make much of a difference to a healthy Australian.
The evidence is definitely there for people at high risk. That means anyone who's older and people with compromised immune systems. But as far as the general public is concerned, so younger, fitter people, the evidence isn't there yet that it will actually help much over and above the third dose.
Professor Adrian Esterman expects those at higher risk could one day be in line for a fifth vaccine dose, but everyone else can expect to stick with three for now. It means that as booster immunity wanes, most of the population will face a higher risk of catching the virus.
The third dose by now would give very little protection against infection and potentially symptomatic disease, but would still give reasonably good protection against serious illness and death. So that protection lasts many months. That would be the key point that ATAGI would be considering. Not so much people getting symptomatic disease, but are they still protected from serious illness and death?
With mass vaccine centres closing around the country, responsibility for the rollout has fallen to GPs and pharmacies. Dr. Faye Sim is the National President of the Pharmaceutical Society of Australia. She says pharmacists can handle any rush on fourth doses if the rules change, as long as they're told in advance.
It will be very similar to how pharmacists managed the situation when the government announced that we could actually give a third dose, for instance. So we do actually have the precedence and the experience there to manage the situation very quickly.
Around the states, Queensland has seen the lowest uptake of the third dose, 59% compared to the national average of 68%. A 9% difference may not seem like much, but it's left tens of thousands of people without the recommended level of protection. The state's chief health officer, John Gerard, says infection numbers will get worse until they get better.
The peak of the current wave is currently projected, based on our most recent modelling, to get worse until at least until the end of July or early August, when it will peak. So that will put even greater pressure on our hospitals in the coming weeks.
Queensland has no plans to bring in restrictions and mask mandates. They're encouraging older people to wear masks in crowded places until the end of August. But in South Australia, it's back in the conversation. South Australia's Police Commissioner, Grant Stevens, says there could come a time when restrictions are once again needed, but it remains a last resort.
Our hospitals are feeling the pressure at the moment.
but our case numbers for COVID don't seem to be increasing dramatically. If people do the right thing and we just start taking small steps like wearing masks in densely populated areas and when we're visiting people who are vulnerable, that could be enough for us not to have to take that next step.
That's the South Australian Police Commissioner, Grant Stevens, ending that report by Angus Randall. And that's the program for today. Thanks for joining me on PM. I'm David Lipson. If you're in the flood-affected zones, tune in to your local ABC radio station for all the updates and alerts you'll need. Of course, you can catch this program live or later on the ABC Listen app. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. What's going on with the weather? After months of torrential rain up and down the east coast, New South Wales is being hit again by severe flooding. Today, my colleague Gavin Coote takes us to the hardest hit communities. And University of New South Wales climate scientist Argos Santoso explains why there could be much more rain to come. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.